content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Demi Arsenault from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Lion Magazine, and we're going to cover some articles from our fall 2019 and December 2019 issues that we didn't have time to get to in those months. We'll begin with a couple articles from our fall 2019 issue, beginning with our In the News department. Our first article is titled, Activist Honored for Work with Survivors of Wartime Sexual Violence. In July, human rights activist and Nobel Peace Laureate Dr. Denis Mukwege was the recipient of the highest honor Lions Club's international bestows. The gynecologist who fights on behalf of survivors of wartime sexual violence was honored at the 102nd International Convention in Milan with the Humanitarian Award. He dedicated the award to victims of sexual violence in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and to all women who have been victims of sexual violence in conflict zones around the world. When war broke out shortly after opening a hospital for gynecological and obstetric care, Mukwege and his team began seeing thousands of women and girls brutalized by wartime sexual violence. His team developed a particularly effective holistic model of healing that integrates psychological support, legal assistance, and socioeconomic support in one medical facility. We can't just treat the finger or the ear, Mukwege explains. We have to see the person as an entire whole. His foundation will receive the hefty $250,000 prize so that they can continue the good work that they are already doing. And next, for Lego fans, Lego Braille bricks put inclusive play at your fingertips. Now parents of blind and visually impaired children will also need to watch their step. A new kind of Lego brick is set for release in 2020. The Lego Group, the Danish toy company that makes the popular building block, has repurposed their hallmark knobs into Braille dots. With thousands of audiobooks and computer programs now available, fewer kids are learning to read Braille, said Philippe Chazal, treasurer of the European Blind Union. This is particularly critical when we know that Braille users often are more independent, have a higher level of education, and better employment opportunities. In addition to the Braille, each brick will have the corresponding printed letter or character so all the students can join in on the fun together. Blind and visually impaired children have dreams and aspirations for their future, just as sighted children, said John Goodwin, CEO of the Lego Foundation. They have the same desire and need to explore the world and socialize through play, but often face involuntary isolation as a consequence of exclusion from activities. The final Lego Braille Bricks kit is expected to launch in 2020 and will be distributed free of charge to select institutions through participating partner networks. Each kit will contain approximately 250 Lego Braille Bricks covering the full alphabet, numbers 0 through 9, select math symbols, and inspiration for teaching and interactive games. We strongly believe Lego Braille Bricks can help boost the level of interest in learning Braille, so we're thrilled that the Lego Foundation is making it possible to further this concept and bring it to children around the world, said Chazal. Next, I want to move to a feature article titled Mending the Social Fabric. What makes us who we are? Beyond the genes that code for our eye color and skin tone, what determines all the nuances that make us us? Are we strong because we inherited our grandmother's sturdy build, or is it because we go to the neighborhood gym every day? Do we have asthma because our father had it, or because we grew up next to a busy highway? When it comes to our health, how much of our destiny is within our control, and how much does our zip code come into play in deciding who is healthy and who is sick? When Dr. Tony Eitan, the Senior Vice President of Building Healthy Communities, the California Endowment, left his hometown to attend medical school at Johns Hopkins University in the 1980s, He was shocked by what he saw. East Baltimore was nothing like Montreal, Canada, where he grew up. Row houses were vacant or hollowed out. Streets were silent. There was no green space, no shops, no life. "When was there a war here?" he stammered. The upperclassman who had been showing him around said, "What did you expect? This is the inner city." Growing up in Montreal, there were community parks, museums, libraries, high-quality housing, and state-of-the-art transportation. "I felt nurtured by the city," Eitan says. But it was clear that children growing up in East Baltimore were getting no such nurturing. In fact, what Eitan saw in their eyes when they showed up at clinics was a flatness that comes from the absence of hope. These children were barraged every single day of their lives with the message that they didn't matter, says Eitan. And they internalized that. You could see the light literally turn off in their eyes. Dr. Eitan called the conditions he saw in East Baltimore dehumanizing. He began to wonder how his life might have been different if he had grown up in a place like that. He wondered, when it comes to health, does your zip code actually matter more than your genetic code? The children living in East Baltimore had no role in creating that environment, but they had to navigate it every single day of their lives. And it was literally killing them. In fact, recent research has shown that by serving as an incubator of chronic diseases like heart disease and diabetes, stress actually changes a person's physiology. So it isn't that poor people have worse habits than healthy people. It's that we've created environments that are so stressful, so devoid of all the things that humans need to thrive, that it alters their genetic code. That's how the outside world gets under the skin, says Eitan. After graduating medical school, Eitan became the health officer of Alameda County in California. In that role, he was responsible for signing death certificates. That gave him access to data that he used to compile a map of the average life expectancy based on neighborhood. The results were shocking. Within the city of Oakland, there were neighborhoods just a few miles from one another in which the life expectancy between them differed by more than 20 years. Subsequent analyses of cities around the country revealed the phenomenon was not isolated to Alameda County, and in some areas, the difference between neighboring zip codes was as much as 30 years. So what exactly was happening in these communities? Why was their population's lifespan so short? These communities were incubators of chronic stress, says Eitan. These communities lacked good educational systems and jobs, experienced high crime rates, and lacked access to grocery stores, parks, transportation, and in some places, even clean drinking water. Any human being placed under these circumstances would experience high levels of stress, says Eitan. This means that people living in these communities experience more illnesses than their counterparts in wealthier communities. And it's not based on food choices or willingness to exercise. It's based on a lack of social support. In the 18th and 19th centuries, it was common in rural North America for community members to come together to build a barn for a member of the community. A barn was necessary for a farmer to keep animals and store food. But to build one was expensive and too difficult for one family to do on their own. So members of the community helped build the barn, knowing that the favor would eventually be returned. For early Americans, life would not have been feasible without the help of community members. Their survival literally depended on it. They saw themselves as responsible for others, not just their own needs and wants. They knew that the well-being of their fellow community members was integral to their own well-being. Today, technology has made it possible for healthy individuals to carry out most activities of daily living without the help of anyone. But do we know the value of what we've given up in exchange for this record level of independence? It's why they talk about the power of we. It's why they know their real power is in boosting each other up. It's why Lions start school lunch programs in community gardens. It's why Lions build parks and sponsor educational scholarships. It's not rocket science, says Eitan. We know what to do. There just needs to be the will to do it. But what's becoming more clear is that in creating services for their communities, Lions are doing more than simply providing eyeglasses or planting trees in a park. They are helping to repair the fabric of community, something that is essential to health. By filling in the social gaps in communities, Lions are working to improve the health of their neighbors. By helping to stock a local library or by cleaning up an old city lot and turning it into a park, Lions are weaving a tighter bond between themselves and their neighbors, helping to improve the odds for people in their community. They are making it less likely that their neighbors and themselves will have diabetes, more likely that they will live longer, healthier lives. It works, really. In 2017, the Journal of American Medical Association published a study that looked at all 50 states over a 26-year period and ranked them according to health, including the, quote, probability of death. Over the time of the study, California was one of two states with the most improvement on probability of death, meaning the state had significantly increased the life expectancy for its residents. Eitan believes that's in large part to several factors. During that time period, California had a great influx of wealth with the tech boom. And wealth, as Eitan says, tends to breed health. But California also has a large immigrant population, and immigrants are almost always healthier than their native-born counterparts. In fact, research from the 1960s identified that Latinos who came to the U.S. were healthier than Americans despite having lower incomes, lower education levels, and highly stressful living conditions. Researchers still aren't sure why this paradox exists, but one popular theory is that it's due to the tight social bonds of the immigrant communities. Immigrants bring this country aspects of culture, of tradition, of tight family social networks and community social networks that essentially form a shield around them, says Eitan in the documentary Becoming American. The other thing that has helped California improve the death rate for its citizens is related to policy. We know that one of the things that correlates to a decrease in diabetes rates is access to parks and recreation space, says Eitan. In places like Fresno, which is one of the poorest congressional districts in the country, trusts set aside for public lands have helped increase health status for Fresno's citizens. California also removed soda from schools and enhanced physical education programs, investing in the health of kids before they become adults with health conditions. And California isn't alone. In Chicago, a huge movement is underway to help residents of some of the poorest communities get better health. North Lawndale has long been known as one of the most troubled neighborhoods on Chicago's South Side. Not only were the residents struggling with poverty, joblessness, and violence, but in 2013, the residents of North Lawndale had twice the average rate of diabetes and a 62% higher diabetes mortality rate compared to the rest of the United States. In 2009, Sinai Urban Health Institute was awarded a grant by the National Institutes of Health to undertake the block-by-block North Lawndale Diabetes Community Action Program. The program was intended to address the high rates of diabetes in the community and focused on awareness, education, self-management, and community engagement. They sent community health educators block by block, knocking on doors to ask after people's health and encourage them to get involved in the program. Community health educators helped people find doctors, drove them to appointments, and followed up with small incentives to keep their treatment plans. They held cooking demonstrations, participated in health fairs, community meetings, and civic gatherings, offering free A1C testing, doctor referrals, and information on community services. They taught diabetes self-management, leadership courses in order to grow more leaders that could help spread information in the community, and they also taught self-management classes on nutrition that promoted social support and teamwork. and it's working. And I'm going to amend very briefly for the sake of time. But it goes on to tell the story of a Mr. Peel who was helped by one of the counselors and wraps up by saying, what does this mean for the Lions? When tackling a problem like diabetes, think of all the things that might impact a person's health and find ways to tackle them. Start a community garden so everyone has access to fresh produce. Help local schools get funding for physical education programs. And help the city purchase land to set aside for a park. And you can find great resources, including club and community resource assessment, at www.lionsclub.org. And speaking of blood sugar, we've got a final article from our fall 2019 issue. It's titled, Blood Sugar on the Brain. When we talk about diabetes, we typically talk about two versions of the condition, type 1 or type 2. It's important to distinguish between the two because the type determines the treatment. But what if there's a new type of diabetes, one that has important consequences for the brain? Diabetes researcher and Lion, Dr. Marco Sanghini, believes he has made a connection between what he is calling type 3 diabetes and dementia. It's a discovery that could revolutionize how we approach the prevention and treatment of cognitive or brain dysfunction. Some may say Sanghini was destined to be a diabetes researcher. As a young man, he had a promising future as a swimmer and a water polo goalkeeper, but those dreams were thwarted after an accident injured his leg. He shifted his goals and set his sights on becoming an engineer. But just 1 year after his accident, Sanghini was diagnosed with diabetes. What Sanghini experienced as a person with diabetes was that it isn't easy being a person with diabetes. He had difficult relationships with his doctors and waited a long time for appointments. Blood had to be drawn twice a day, and the syringes boiled between these uses. At that time, there were no reagent strips or portable blood glucose meters. The results of the blood glucose tests weren't available until several days later, making the day-to-day management of his condition that much harder. I realized how important it was for a person with diabetes to become independent in the management of his or her condition, he says. I personally became convinced I had to know the most about diabetes in order to be able to live together with it and not be overwhelmed. So he became a diabetes researcher. After the first few difficult years, I started to lead a very active, almost frenetic life in an attempt to show to myself and others that there was nothing I couldn't do because I had diabetes. Since becoming a specialist in diabetes research, Sanghini has helped many patients deal with the demands of the condition. And now he's helped to define a new kind of diabetes, which has helped to bring attention to the impact the condition has on the brain. In type 1 diabetes, the body's immune system destroys the cells that make insulin, the hormone that processes sugar. People with type 1 diabetes require regular insulin injections to maintain a safe blood glucose level. In type 2 diabetes, persistent high levels of sugar in the blood make the body less able to use the hormone properly. Type 2 diabetes is typically associated with poor diet and insufficient exercise, though family history can play a role as well. Eating better, getting in a fitness routine, and taking medications can all help control high blood sugar in people with type 2 diabetes. Previously, it was thought that the central nervous system, which the brain is a part of, was not affected by diabetes. But recent research has been indicating that there is indeed a connection between high blood sugar, insulin, and brain function. And patients with diabetes who develop dementia have a unique form of the disease. Based on these findings, Sanghini and his team have been investigating the possibility of a third type of diabetes that is related to Alzheimer's. It breaks the old dogma that the brain is independent of insulin's action on it, says Sanghini. If proven true by connecting diabetes and dementia, healthcare professionals may be able to treat or even head off the devastating consequences of cognitive decline. What's especially interesting about Sanghini's research is that it shows that only slightly elevated levels of blood sugar can cause the devastating effects of cognitive dysfunction, which means even people who get a clean bill of health from their doctor may be at risk. Now more than ever, Lions should keep doing the good job to prevent diabetes, says Sanghini. There may be even more benefits to a healthy lifestyle than we ever knew. And next, I'm going to move to our December 2019 issue of Lion Magazine, beginning with our LCIF Impact column. It's titled, Sight First Gives New Life to People in Burkina Faso. LCIF's Sight First program has been restoring and protecting sight for almost 30 years and is now present in 102 countries. This extraordinary program develops comprehensive eye care systems, providing aid to underserved populations by developing comprehensive eye care systems. Projects including training eye care professionals and management personnel, upgrading the infrastructure of existing eye care systems, improving access to education and rehabilitation for people who are blind or visually impaired, and increasing public awareness of the importance of eye health. Through the support of LCIF, Lions, and partners, Sight First focuses on eye care challenges as simple as an uncorrected refractive error to something as complex as a bacterial infection such as trachoma. They make it possible for Lions to put a stop to avoidable blindness. Approximately 80% of global vision impairment can be prevented. As Knights of the Blind, Lions take this statistic to heart and work hard to improve the lives of people across the world who are in danger of losing their vision. In Burkina Faso, a 2-year Sight First project is providing eye care access in areas where eye care is unaffordable. Supported by a $110,746 U.S. dollar LCIF Sight First grant, Lions and a local organization called $1 Glasses are establishing 4 clinics where patients will have their vision screened at no cost. In addition, eyeglasses will be for sale at a much lower rate than at local markets, or free for those who cannot afford it. The project, which began in 2018, is expected to screen 124,000 people and will distribute 26,400 pairs of eyeglasses. Meet some of the lives that this project has changed throughout its first year. We'll start with Francois. Francois couldn't see clearly more than 10 inches or 25 centimeters ahead. Yet, the 65-year-old man left his village at 4 o'clock in the morning to travel on his motorbike 29 miles or 45 kilometers. The trip was not easy. The road was rocky and in dangerous condition. He had a few mishaps along the way and followed other motorists closely so he knew where to go. He hoped the trip would be worth it. Though Francois needed eye care badly, it was unaffordable in his village. Then one day, Francois's friend mentioned one of the new clinics helping locals who could not afford eye care. Francois made the long and arduous trek and arrived at the clinic where an optician screened his vision and determined the correct prescription for his eyeglasses. Francois was able to purchase the eyeglasses for just 5,000 CFA, which is just 10 U.S. dollars. When he put them on, he smiled. He told the optician he could see everything perfectly. Francois left on his motorbike and headed home. This time, he didn't need to follow anyone. And then there's Idrissa. Every morning, Idrissa wakes and heads out to his bistro. His specialty is avocado sandwiches made with tomatoes, onions, and avocados on a fresh baguette. It is how many people in his neighborhood start their day. Idrissa loves what he does. There is just one problem, a big problem. Idrissa has very poor eyesight. Even as the owner of a successful business, the 30-year-old could not afford eyeglasses. Once involved in all aspects of his bistro, Idrissa can no longer use a motorbike to deliver sandwiches, so he relies on his brother to make the deliveries. He misses the interactions with his customers. He misses looking for new opportunities to grow his bistro. Meanwhile, word of a new clinic was making its way to Idrissa's neighborhood. His brother heard about the clinic and told Idrissa about the opportunity for free vision testing and affordable eyeglasses. Longing to end his daily frustrations, Idrissa made his way to the clinic, where he had the first eye examination in his life. Afterward, he put on the eyeglasses he purchased, and his life changed in an instant. He started delivering sandwiches again, visiting with his customers, winning new customers, and growing his business. He smiles as customers come through the door. At the age of 30, Idrissa feels like a new person, and he wants others to have the same experience. On a wall in his bistro hangs a poster promoting the clinic, so others struggling with poor vision can have a chance at a new life, too. And finally, Constan. 4 years ago, Constan completely lost his vision. He was suffering with glaucoma, an eye disease that often doesn't show any symptoms until it's in an advanced stage. After some unfortunate mishandling of the condition, he became irreversibly blind. In 2019, at the age of 29, Constan didn't have a job and could not support himself. That is, until Sight First established a nearby eye clinic. The clinic needed someone who could produce eyeglasses, and Constan was fit for the role. Newly trained, Constan is now employed as a producer, earning a living and creating eyeglasses that will change the lives of thousands of people. Thanks to support from the LCIF's Sight First program, Local Lions, and $1 glasses, people in less fortunate circumstances are gaining their independence, including Francois, Idrissa, and Constan. And you can visit lcif.org/campaign100 to learn how Campaign 100 is empowering Lions to lead the charge to rid the world of infectious blindness, reduce avoidable blindness and visual impairment, and improve the overall quality of life of those with blindness or visual impairment. And last but not least, we have time for a couple pieces of club news, beginning with the Sale Creek Lions in Tennessee, who every year they host a kids' Christmas party with Santa. Children's names are submitted by teachers. Santa gives each child a new coat, shoes, and an outfit of clothes plus toys. Families receive a basket of fruit and boxes of groceries, and each child receives a large framed picture of their visit with Santa. The club buys toys and clothes plus fruit and groceries. Area churches chip in for groceries, and local citizens fill up a barrel with new toys. And unfortunately, we've run out of time for today's issue of Lion Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time, though. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Demi Arsenault for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after our show at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. And again, that was 919-832-5138. Have a wonderful day.